Welcome to Control Talk Now, your smart buildings podcast with Ken Smyers and Eric Stromquist. Control news you can use. And now, here's your hosts, Ken and Eric.
Hi, welcome to Control Talk Now. This is your host, Eric Stromquist. Control Talk Now, your smart buildings video cast and podcast for the week ending March 29th, 2015. I am joined, as usual, by the man, the myth, the legend, the one, the only, Kenny Smyers from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Kenny, welcome to another week of Control Talking.
Thank you, Eric. It's great to be here. So the big moment has not yet occurred at the Stromquist household, huh? Give us an update.
Well, it hasn't yet. For our listeners, you probably know my wife, Anna, is 9 months pregnant. Her due date was 2 days ago. So we are anxiously awaiting the arrival of our son. And I tell you what, Kenny, we're about ready to get a pickup truck and go for a ride on a bumpy road. I can only imagine how tough it must be for women to go through pregnancy. I know that there's no way in the world I would survive it. So I have a lot of respect for my wife, Anna, and all women who give childbirth. It's got to be like playing professional football without equipment and pads and stuff like that, I'm guessing.
We've taken off that subject there, Eric Stromquist. No, good luck, Anna, and we're rooting for you, and very happy for you. It's going to be fine.
Yep, absolutely. So hopefully I'll get this show edited before the baby comes, but excited about that. And for our listeners out there, thank you so much for your well-wishing. And as soon as the new baby shows up, we will get it posted on Control Trends. So, Kenny, one of the things I wanted to just start off with and follow up with, Anna's family's in town, her dad and her brother, Ari, who lives in Los Angeles. And Ari is self-proclaimed right on the cusp of Generation Y, you know, brilliant guy, lives out in L.A., really cool guy, keeps up with all the trends and stuff like that. And so I was sort of asking him a little bit about wearable technology and what he thinks about that. And interesting stuff, Kenny, he's sort of coming from the perspective now of less is more, meaning that he says, you know, people of his generation now are wearing watches again for the first time, but that they're just sort of a little over all the information, if you will, all the big data. So they're getting more, a little bit more simplistic. But I asked him specifically about Google Glasses. And if you're just tuning in, Kenny and I have been tracking Google Glasses. Kenny interviewed Dave Lorenzini, one of the developers of Google Glasses, a while back. Kenny and I think Google Glasses might be the answer to creating great service levels where you can have one great tech that's sitting back at headquarters. You can have people that maybe are not as well versed wearing the Google Glasses out in the field. And we actually have some videos posted of that, Kenny, where you see the tech looking through the eyes of the tech in the field with the Google Glasses. And it seems like just a great way for efficiency. So I was very curious to get Ari's take on Google Glasses. And he says they're big out in L.A. They've got a big presence. As you see a lot of people wearing them, more guys maybe our age. He said it's a big turnoff to the Generation Ys. He says it's a huge turnoff. And I said, what's the deal with that? Why? He says, well, a couple of things. He said, you never know whether they're recording you or not, because they could have the glasses on and recording everything you say. So he says, when you see somebody, like, for example, at a Starbucks come in with Google Glasses, everybody is sort of getting out of their way. Nobody wants to be in their line of sight, which I thought was fascinating.
Sure, because it's reporting. They might not supposed to be there. They might be playing hooky from something or whatever. You know, it's just that you didn't feel like it's an invasion to your privacy. Sure.
No, absolutely. And he said that you can't even, I guess you're not, I think I understand him correctly. You're not even allowed to wear them in movie theaters because you could be in a movie theater with Google Glasses and recording the movie. So interesting issues that you and I had not considered. But so I think in the evolution of smart glasses, the hipster generation, in terms of it being a fashion accessory and something that you're going to wear out and you're going to see a lot of them around town, is probably not going to happen, Kenny. So I don't think it diminishes the legitimacy of using it in our business for service techs and stuff like that. So Dave Lorenzini and Google Glasses, if you're listening, again, Kenny and I would like to see if we can help you guys get these entrenched in our industry, because I think in the service industry, they would make a lot of sense.
Well, Eric, if you remember back when cell phones first came out and had the ability to take pictures and do videos, There was an awful, abuse that took place. That's, I remember the workout centers, Club Julian's, what's some of the other big workout, national.
Yeah, LA Fitness or something.
LA Fitness is probably the biggest, but they all had policies. And when you signed up, you you agreed not to to abuse the the privacy of every of your co-members, and they enforced it. I remember several instances where people were lost their membership and whatever, paid some penalty, of course, because they didn't listen to it. So that for every thesis there's an antithesis and then there's a synthesis. So basically, when you see the Google Glass come out, that's the presentation of new technology, and then there's going to be a backlash to it, and then they're going to cancel each other out and synthesize into a workable, wearable technology that doesn't evade private. Anybody can abuse anything anywhere, but the cameras, that's such a powerful tool that if it's used negatively, it can damage a lot of people's lives and evade privacy forever. Once it goes up on the internet, it's permanent. That's the hard thing to deal with.
Makes you wonder why you and I do these shows and post them every week, because this is a permanent archive. And if you guys want to get a real hoot, go back and look at some of the early episodes of Control Talk Now when Kenny and I were just getting started. We've come a long way, Kenny. I tell you, we've got a long way to go, but those are pretty comical. But we were doing our best. But it is interesting. And Kenny, last week, you posted, because you had tracked down and done a lot of research, and the wearable technology trend is huge. I mean, that market is getting ready to blow up. There's so many positive uses of it. I think we're going to see a lot of other things. I mean, the watches and stuff like that. But the glasses, you actually put a link to, I think, about 10 or 15 different companies that are actually coming out with the smart glasses. And I'm not sure Google's putting much energy into it anymore, but I looked at a couple of those videos, Kenny. It was kind of cool. They showed, for example, an architect or designer coming into a house, and both he and the homeowners were wearing this version of the smart glasses. And they're talking about, looking at a wall and talking about the design, and they're actually able to do it in such a way that as they're talking about the changes, they're showing up in the glasses virtually. So they're actually able to see exactly what's going on with that. And I thought that was cool. And you start thinking, for example, about BIMS modeling and how prevalent that is in our industry. And it makes me wonder if it won't be when an owner goes in for an experience like that, they'll be wearing a smart glasses where the simulations can be done where you can actually see them. So I don't think the glasses are done yet. I think they're going to evolve, but it is interesting, like I said a minute ago, that I don't think we're going to see it. It's not going to be the type of thing your teenage son's going to wear to impress his girlfriend. I don't think
What they might be able to do, Eric, is you might be able to walk into a no glass zone where all of a sudden it can overpower, just like different police agencies and law enforcement agencies. They can overpower cell phones. They can shut them down, basically. Well, little shopping centers or whatever, people where you can't wear the glasses, they could probably put technology in there that would basically stunt that or prevent the operation of the glasses. But you were talking about that. What about if you were a home inspector or a building inspector and you put the glasses on, your wearable technology, and you can walk in and you can do the video surveillance of the facility. You could do thermal imaging. You could do all this technology with your presence,
Absolutely, Kenny.
So it's not going to go away. It's just, like you said, it's going to be like waves washing on the shore. It's going to take some time for the beach where it belongs so people can come out and enjoy it,
Well, as you say that, Kenny, it's interesting because obviously you and I both appreciate the power of the video. And if you look even, for example, if the sort of the mixed blessing, if you will, with the police cars having the videos cameras, I mean, it creates a lot of issues, but at the same time, it helps a lot of problems. So I'm curious, and if any of our listeners out there, Scott Mensch from J2 Innovation probably would know the answer to this, but I've sort of got this idea that I want to do a project. It's a little bit off topic, but with Axel and Evelyn, it'd be so cool because, if you've seen the GoPros, you see the helmets, and there's such cool videos from that, right? I saw one on the line the other day. It's actually on the they got it on like an eagle or something like that, or bird, so you're actually seeing things from their perspective, which got me thinking how cool it would be to maybe get like a baby GoPro or something to put on, our new baby's, head, or at least Evelyn. So now you could see their perspective. So I wanted to sort of do a video project where like I'm shooting a video of them, but then you're getting the video of us looking at them just to sort of get their perspective, because it is sort of fascinating when you're able to see things from different perspectives. But I will just say this, any of our listeners who have an idea how I could do a baby GoPro or something like that, I'd appreciate that. But Kenny, I could talk about this all day. Let's get on with the show, big dog. We had a big week. I think, are we going to officially call this Johnson Controls Week?
I think we should. Rob Allen / Johnson Controls, because there's four posts to do with Johnson Controls, and it kind of is befitting because they had their big ABCS business conference down there in Florida, and Rob gave us the ability to be there at the booths through interviewing four different Johnson Controls folks, and the first one, first post is Johnson Controls Business Conference Update, the new Airflow products. And again, hats off to Rob and the Johnson people for sharing that, because, I mean, you're almost like you're there. You're almost like at their trade show booths walking through. They had a theme of baseball. And for every time you went to visit one of the product displays, you got so many points, which led to singles, doubles, triples, home runs, and grand slams by your point total. And then, of course, there was awards, so it was a nice incentive, but it was a nice thing, baseball. You know, it was March Madness, it was basketball, but this was spring training baseball, so it was a cool thing. But the first post was Nancy Ganuzzi, who's an Airflow expert. She got Johnson Controls, how they made an investment. They bought Ruskin. Previously, Johnson relied on Ruskin to manufacture their dampers, their louvers, Airflow stations, but now it's a Johnson subsidiary. And she explained the difference between, you know, you have just modulating air versus very tight control of air inside of a building and what you need to do that. It's pretty cool how she says the airflow, it just starts out with you can have differential pressure where you're trying to, the louvers keep out the snow, rain, and then they smooth the airflow out, but it's a science. And it was a very interesting video because it explained the considerations for HVAC applications involving dampers and airflow.
That was really cool. And we got to cover the product show the last conference. And boy, I tell you, if you ever get a chance to attend one of the Johnson Controls business conferences, it's a great mixture, if you will, of great speakers. But the product show in and itself, they have some really knowledgeable technical people, Kenny, and Nancy is no exception to that. So that was good stuff, and that was Rob broke the ice with the Friday night one where he was pretending to be us. What do you think about that, Dave?
Well, he did make a comment that it looks easier than it really is, because it's behind the curtains. There's a lot of things that a lot of work that has to be done, and it's not magic. So
magic. As we can attest to, messing around the last hour or so trying to get this this particular show up and running. I mean, we did a test and crashed the computer. So yeah, but was he making fun of you, Rob? Was he making fun of us?
Sure, he was.
He should, because you know what? We're ridiculous. We are absolutely ridiculous. It's a good thing we don't take ourselves too seriously, huh?
Right.
All right. What do we have up next, big dog?
Transitions right to the next. Like I say, this is going to be a Johnson Controls theme with Rob Allen doing the presentation. So we're going to be somewhat repetitive starting everything off. But we'll go into the second presentation was the Johnson Controls, the new digital thermostats. Again, Rob Allen, he meets up with Terry Pearson at the product presentation. And it turned into be a very important post and a real post because we trend everything on light commercial solutions, this race to small space. We know that the thermostat right now is still the most important component of our national attempts to smarten the grid and make our every house and building more energy efficient and operationally sound. But Johnson came out with some really nice thermostats, and they've got a touchpad. They actually are making a step into the light commercial market and the residential market. So here we go. We got challenging. We've already got a handful of great thermostats: Nest, Ecobee, Honeywell, several types. And so on and so forth. But here comes Johnson, because this is a full color touchscreen, and it has some features that I haven't heard before. You can put your photo albums up there. You can have it a rotational background. You can, and it does everything. It's very simple to operate, and hats off to them. But then they transitioned into the TEC3000 product line. They gave a preview. It's not ready yet, but it's going to replace the TEC2000 products. So, again, it's going to have a full-colored touchpad, very configurable for multiple applications, fan coil, you know, baseboards, the two heat, three heat, cool, two heat, I'm sorry, two heat, two cool, three heat, two cool. So you've got an ability to consolidate all the applications in one thermostat.
I think it's cool, Kenny. I mean, you think about it, that's the only thing that's really been missing from Johnson's portfolio of products. I mean, they haven't had a thermostat since the pneumatics. They were dominant. Them and Honeywell both, I think, dominated with the pneumatics. And as a matter of fact, the Johnson series of pneumatic thermostats is still huge out there. So
sure,
real cool stuff. I wish Rob had asked. I mean, I wonder if Johnson's making them themselves or somebody's making it for them. But
no, they say they're making them. And remember, Johnson Controls, actually, if you look at it, Warren Johnson invented or patented the first thermostat.
There are people in Minneapolis that would probably throw down on that one and say,
it's an established fact. Warren S. Johnson, we have a post on it from ASHRAE.
I remember we had the post, but I'm just saying, that's the type of thing that people will argue that. I mean, I'm not doubting that Warren Johnson did it. I'm just saying those could be fighting words in thermostat land, right?
Well, they did temperature control and air control. In other words, Honeywell called it something different, and they do also have products back in the 1880s. In 1890s or one of their earlier companies.
Because Tony Fadell is saying he invented the thermostat, right?
Well, and Echo B says they got a better, that Nest copied off him. So Stuart Lombard thinks that he was the guy that created the first intelligent thermostat.
You know, I mean, they're thermostats and they're thermostats, right? Just like they're women and they're women.
Well, you know what? It's like the best football team. It's all relative to the actual day of the game and who plays the best game.
I don't mean to take away from Thunder, but I think Johnson, again, sort of the point I wanted to make, Kenny, is that Johnson just, when they come out with a product, it's well thought out, well engineered. And one of the things I love about their product line is that, by the time you get it, you're pretty confident it's going to work. I mean, they're occasionally we'll get some glitches with those guys, but for the most part, they're rock solid. And then if there is an issue, you got guys like Chris Lane and the technical support team and Greg Wilmer, they're going to get right on it and get you fixed up. So,
well said. Yeah, I think they really do. And you mentioned the pneumatic thermostats, and Johnson knows that they have zillions of those T4000 thermostats out there. And what they've come up with is a next generation solution there with a WT4000. It's an upgrade system. It'll take those thermostats and give them some intelligence. You know, right now, a pneumatic thermostat is not visible on the network. It doesn't give you any information back other than, you know, through the receiver controller or whatever. But now they actually have put visual capabilities on this WT4000 that could tell you about leaks in the system where you have no air or you have problems. But they actually put visibility into the system, and it can bring it right up to the Jace. Rob does. He asks some questions that are very important because now integration can include your pneumatic thermostats without undoing everything. In other words,
That's so cool. Okay. So what actually do like time of day programming and stuff like that with it?
Absolutely. Well, you'll make them from the front end. In other words, they're connected to the network now. So that the
network. That's so cool, huh? That is so cool. So imagine having a building where you got a ton of pneumatic thermostats in it. Maybe you want to put an automation system in, but you're looking for ways to sort of get in as economically as possible. With something like this, you can use your existing pneumatic thermostats. More importantly, your pneumatic valves and actuators, right? That's where a lot of the cost is. Get the system in, and then eventually phase those out if you want to.
Well, yeah, I mean, but these big mush market customers, municipalities, universities, schools, and hospitals, they have tremendous legacy systems that are pneumatic. The foundation of the building control is pneumatic still, and these guys are trained on it. And they understand it. And they're really good at it. To just disconnect that whole, you know, working system and undo the, you know, or replace the legacy system, rip and tear, would be a mistake. You know, a lot of changes are going on, you know, with budgets, and it's a real hard fought out victory to get a new system put in that totally replaces the old system. So many times you're nursing your legacy system for as long as possible, and then when the opportunity arises, you can start the second, you know, leg of your system. It's going to be the new web-based, you know, networked, you know, control of your system. But in the meantime, you've got to use transducers and different things to leverage that existing legacy system. You know,
so, I agree.
Great product.
Well, I tell you one. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. I was just going to say that there was one secondary post where we got to talk about the EM4000 meters. That was also Terry Pearson's product platform.
Yeah, and I think we actually interviewed Terry when we were down there. He was a very, very smart product manager individual. And I was just going to get – the comment I was going to make, Kenny, was I think in a few years, and you're right about the legacy systems and the pneumatics are sort of rock solid. There's a lot more maintenance in it. And I think it's kind of, as Paul Oswalt from ESI would say, there's a lot of tribal knowledge that's leaving the building with pneumatics. And, you know, I would venture to say my prediction would be 5 years from now when we have our young guns come up to the next class of young guns, I'd be surprised if anybody were able to actually spell pneumatics, much less work on them.
I was at a meeting 1993. I remember taking notes there and getting gunned up for you know, the first DDC systems, you know, W7600s and whatever. And they made a prediction that pneumatics would go away in like, you know, 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, they were adamant. And they said, this is what we do to prepare this transition. And here we are, 2015. And I'll tell you what, pneumatic products, the sale of pneumatic products represents a very high percentage of sales.
Oh, we sell a lot of them, Kenny. We still sell a ton of them. Yeah.
You sure do. Yeah. And Johnson, Honeywell, you know, Barbara Coleman, and all the different names they had afterwards, you know, they are bases that are in all these school districts that are still working to, you know, incredibly, you know, as well as pneumatics can work. They keep it worked that well. And now they're adding the transducer, so all those end devices now can be controlled and have the energy strategies, you know, that a DDC system has. So,
yeah, absolutely. All right, big dog. Well, let's move on.
Let's cover that. You know, we have the EM4000 meters. The incredible thing that they did there, and I just want to go over it because Johnson's taken the meters to the next level. I mean, they've taken this EM4000 and made expansion slots available. So now, you know, you have digital inputs so that you could take the neighboring meter and bring it into the system there. So you could take a water meter or a gas you know, meter, and you could bring it in through your electric meter as far as that pulse information and take it back to your front end to do your calculations and to archive the information. But what I thought was really incredible was that they made a deal where they can now control. The new model can actually sequence a chiller because they now have control functionality in this EM4000 meter, and it will actually give you analog outputs. So that is that's a step up. I haven't seen that yet in meters yet. So an EM4000 looks like a real winner.
Oh, it does, Kenny. It does. All right, Kenny, so what we have up next, big dog?
All right, Eric, I told you it's going to be a little bit redundant. Next up is Johnson Controls Business Conference Update, Making the Connected Community Work for You. And this is another favorite trend of ours, the social media and the dynamic people behind an organization's social media can make or break the way an organization communicates and progresses. And we have Rob Allen interviewing Heather Aspis, and he calls her Heather Awesome because she's really gregarious, she's very knowledgeable. And you're talking about she explains the theme with the baseball and the single double and the points you get for every time you check into one of the product manager's stations, you get so many points. But that was a clever idea. She might have been responsible for that. But so she's talking about how the connected community is really important to customers and end users and their channel partners, because that's how Johnson's going to rely on passing important information, product updates, schedules, just an awareness. So and then when she got to finishing up, she said that she really appreciated the critique, the feedback, so that they know for the next business conference, in order to keep making things better, keep improving things, give us some feedback, give us some healthy comments, what you like, what you didn't like, what works for you, and what doesn't. So to see that kind of, you know, communication on a higher level.
No, it is really cool. And you know, that's Rick Van Buren, I think, Kenny, that puts that conference on for JCI. So congratulations to Rick. I understand he did another fantastic job there. So cool. What do we have up next, big dog?
All right. Well, we finally have the intersperse with a different subject matter. This is Project Haystack, and now this keynote for the 2015 conference coming up in Colorado Springs, Colorado, March 24th, they made an announcement of their speakers. And we've got some three top-notch industry experts. We have Dennis Loretto, Global Business Development, M2M Solutions at Vitaphone. He's a recognized leader in the commercialization of new technologies and authority on M2M and IoT. We have Jack McGowan, principal at the McGowan Group. He is an internationally recognized expert in the fields of energy services, efficiencies, building automation, analytics, and the smart grid. And then we have Mr. Peter Lee Detweiler, principal at Northbridge Energy Partners, LLC, and he's the former senior vice president of Constellation Energy. Peter has over 15 years of experience in retail energy at the Fortune 125 power company and its precursors. So that is a very important revelation and more impetus that you got to be at Project Haystack because it's going to be May 18th through the 20th and the Cheyenne, it's a great resort area. And why don't you tell us what your thoughts are about the first Project Haystack? It's important for our community to be at the Project Haystack meeting.
All I got to say, Kenny, is there's something happening here. And what it is exactly clear. You got to stop. Listen, what's that sound? I tell you, Kenny, that first Project Haystack was, what a surprise. It was awesome to see the collaboratory, the way people come together to work on it. The concept makes sense. The big winners are the users. And I think anybody that participates wins as well. So I was impressed with the first one. Can't wait for the second one. Colorado Springs, where Nikola Tesla did his thing out there. It's a beautiful city. I've been there before, Kenny. It's going to be awesome. So really looking forward to it. But it will be a great, great event. My friend Mark Petock's involved in it. John Petsy. The speakers you just mentioned are super, super bright. So I think it'll be time well spent.
Yeah, and I was stopping a little bit. The Cheyenne Mountain Resort in Colorado Springs. So I was on that website, and it is gorgeous. It's it's a great mix of networking, learning, beholding what might be one of the most important developments in our industry, which is tagging. And the Project Haystack is the open source effort that streamlines the interchange of data and the techniques for managing, presenting, and analyzing vast amounts of data generated by today's smart devices and building an energy system. So it's a big welcome to attend. Go online. We have several links on Control Trends that can take you right to the registration table and get you set up so that you don't miss a very, very important, exciting conference.
Very, very cool, Kenny. Very cool.
All right, Eric. Next up, we have a Johnson Controls Business Conference update. Meet the ABCS channel partners. Again, Rob Allen does a spectacular job dealing with the challenges whenever you're trying to video outside. You got light issues, you got sound issues, you got wind issues, but he staved off, he was determined to get it accomplished, and he did. And I was just amazed how much information I got there. So the impact, it did a great job, but you had Robert Harland, the Southeast Regional Manager. You had Dan Preston, who manages Canada to Florida, the Eastern Region. You had King Thomas, who's the director for ABCS Channel North America. What a great guy he is. He's certainly a PID candidate. But they talk about the privilege of focus. And this was a new concept. I really like this. It means that the channel management has been changed. Instead of being regional and then the Johnson rep would take care of branch business, channel partner business, contractor business, this guy now is in charge of the ABCS channel only. He doesn't have to, straddle issues and play games. He can go right to the issues, and he's not distracted from the other channels. And he can, this privilege of focus gives them the ability to bring the best to their customers and earning business. And some of the cool things they talked about was, they're getting better at dealing with challenges, and they really believe in the loyalty concept. They really believe that partners are very important, and they need protection, and they need the benefit of from Johnson. But they say partnership is a two-way street, and that led into Rob's good presentation on what he thought the biggest takeaway was the cost to server model. And this is about customer stratification and account stratifications. There's four categories. I don't know which ones they are, but they say how to spend your time to go hardest, like on the Pareto rule, 80-20. You put most of your attention on the biggest returns, and you don't waste time with people that are using you for information and bleeding you for competitive information. You work with people that are your partners, and you solidify that relationship, and that's a winning principle.
Absolutely is, Kenny, and I was very impressed with that. Rob told me a little bit about that, and So it was good stuff. I tell you, for our listeners out there, we and viewers, more specifically our viewers, we're having a little issue with Skype this morning, so I apologize. Kenny's fuzzing out a little bit, but we're going to persevere here. Sometimes we're just at the mercy of Skype. And especially given the fact that my wife has just informed me that she's been feeling a few little contractions. I think normally we would reset, just do the whole thing again. But I think today, Kenny, we're going to work our way through it. So let's hit it with the next post. Kenny, what else what was next up, big dog?
Well, next was Mr. Jones, tech tips, making liquid level gauges work. And Bill is an expert inside of the mechanical rooms. He's particularly good with the flame safeguard and gas pressure regulators. But this is a post on liquid level gauges, like the ones made by Combraco. And these are in every equipment room. And as simple as they might seem, if you've ever tried to replace one, it could be a real pain in the butt. It could be real tricky. And so Bill talks about the different styles from the good, better, best, where you have the gauge glass, the bottom valve, the top valve, the glass protection, and different things you can. You can spend a lot of money on these things, but they're very important because they give you that visual verification of what your level is inside of a tank or a boiler or whatever, a vessel that contains water.
No, agreed. And Bill is, you know, Kenny, as you know, because I know you and your brother Dave sometimes, you know, call Bill for stuff. Bill is like a boiler guy first. He knows boilers backwards and forwards. He knows gas pressure. He knows piping. And he knows Combraco. Combraco is the leader in that field. And we all have them. We all have those liquid level gauges and replacing the cocks on those things, replacing the glass. There's nothing worse than having something it should be as simple as that. You order something because you're not sure what you need, you get it in the field, you got your tech out there, and all of a sudden, you know, the gauges don't work, and that's frustrating. And Bill does great just sort of nuts and bolts videos. He stays busy, Kenny. I tell you, he's one of our best guys. He takes probably more calls than anybody else at our company. He is a consummate worker. He goes above and beyond in everything he does. And I tell you what, I got to tell you, this guy, I don't think I've ever told people this story or not, but like with Tim Chambly, I mean, I meet these people when I'm out in the field. And I'll tell you a quick Bill Jones story. This goes back 25 years, Kenny. I'm making a call. I'm in Gainesville, Florida. I'm pulling into a Timpaco because for our listeners who may or may not know, we're a master distributor for gas pressure regulators as well as some other products. So we sell other wholesalers a lot of their gas pressure regulators. I go in to see the manager at Timpaco. He's asking me about a particular gas regulator. I start telling him about the brands we handle. He says something along the lines of, well, okay, I'm going to need such and such. I'm going to need a gas regulator to go from 40 pounds down to 17 inches. It's kind of an odd thing. What spring do I need? What do I need here? And all of a sudden, I hear from the end of the counter, this guy goes, you need a model 1803, 1 1/4, which has a capacity of this. You need a spring number 85, 64, 72, 85, P0017. And I looked out the end of the counter, and this is Mr. Jones. He has, among other things, Kenny, a photographic memory. At least he did. I mean, he's not looking at a catalog or anything, but he just says, who is this guy, right? So I go talk to him and said, how did you know? They goes, well, you know, I just, sometimes when I look at stuff, I just remember it. And so I pursued Bill for about 10 years before he finally came to work with us, and he works out of our Jacksonville, Florida location. So Bill's down there, and just a very knowledgeable guy. He's a great camera guy, Kenny. He has taught me a lot about photography. He's gotten into video now. And as you can see by the work he does, if you look at this last video, Bill is, he's phenomenal. And the sound quality of that is great. He showed me, Kenny, he actually sells a lot of his photographs. He's got a guy who's writing a book on, I think it's Smith & Wesson pistols. And Bill is, the guy's paying Bill to do the images for him for the book. So he's taking all the pictures of the guns and stuff like that. He restores motorcycles. So if you have an old motorcycle, or if you ever get a chance, if you call Stromquist & Company, get Bill Jones on the phone, ask him about some of his motorcycles, ask him about some of his gun collection. Just a very interesting individual. So thanks to Bill for that. I hope we can get Bill to do more of these tech-type videos, because after all, that's one of the major functions of Control Trends, is a place you can go get information and control news you can use. So thank you, Billy Jones.
Thanks, Bill. All right, next up we have Belimo Energy Valve wins Energy Savings Product of the Year at the 2014 Control Trends Awards in Chicago. And this is going to be a neat post to talk about for a couple reasons. One, you know as well as I do that the Belimo Energy Valve earns all its accolades. It won the AHR Innovation Product of the Year. It won the Control Trends Awards 2014 award. And they put that in their marketing schematic, and it's great to look at because the valve is actually delivering what it's supposed to do. It's the applications are for two-way pressure-independent valves that optimize and document improve water coil effectiveness and performance, and they use the electronic pressure-independent valve platform. So the energy valve measures energy, controls power, and manages delta T. So that's rock solid. Great technical, great engineering. Let's talk about the people. That's a great picture of one of the representatives from Belimo. Why don't you tell us about Gary? And then you got a great email from Lars Vanderhagen. Tell us about that.
Well, I tell you what, I want to start with, that's Gary Weber. Gary handles distribution. Gary is one of the guys like us who's been around for a long, long time, Kenny. He's worked for Johnson Controls, Siemens, and has been with Belimo for quite some time. So very knowledgeable individual. So very happy to see Gary up there representing Belimo. But I got to tell you, I want to sort of cycle back around for a minute, Ken, because we talked about, just a minute ago, we talked about from the Johnson Controls Conference, stratifying your customers. And I tell our people, our salespeople, you need to stratify your products too, because this energy valve, there is nobody, Kenny, that has anything like the Belimo energy valve. As a matter of fact, I told Belimo, I'm going to sell more energy valves than anybody in the country. I'll throw that challenge down. I encourage you, if you're a distributor or contractor, take me up on it, because this product, Kenny, is phenomenal. Like you said, it does just like three valves in one. It does pressure independent control, so you can eliminate the need for a balancing valve, which basically means if you're a consulting engineer, and you can also control your chillers off a delta T. And what that really means in layman's terms is you can raise the delta T, and every time you raise the delta T on a chiller loop, you are saving a ton of money. MIT did a study on it, Kenny, and we've got it on the website. They saved over $1 million a year at one of their libraries by putting this in. Belimo, I mean, I think MIT thought it was too good to be true, so they took the Belimo challenge. That was their study. There's several other universities that have done it. But so it saves money. It's got a BTU meter built into it. So if you've got LEED certification type things you're looking for, where you need to do reporting, you can pull that data right off of the valve. But Kenny, it is such a phenomenal product. I mean, it is a no-brainer. I tell my salespeople, this is the one product that you really don't have competition on, because they're the only people that make it, Kenny, and they do a great job with it. Now they go down to, I think it's 1/2 inch or 3/4.
So half inch.
Half inch. So there's no reason not to have it. This is, again, one of those companies that just keeps improving. And so I would encourage you, if you haven't tried the Belimo Energy Valve, reach out to your local Belimo distributor. Tell them you want to take a look at it. Belimo, in most cases, will give you a valve to evaluate. And it's definitely worth checking out. And that sort of cycles back around to the email we got from Lars Vanderhagen. Lars was running the North American part of Belimo, and now he is in charge of the whole thing. So Lars is moving back to Switzerland, and Lars being the consummate professional and just all around good guy, Kenny. I mean, a lot of people, I think, when they make it to the executive level, some of them just forget, some of the niceties, some of the things. But, you know, we got just a tremendous email from Lars thanking us for the video and complimenting us on it. And, you know, it's those little things, Kenny, that that just go such a long way. And so Lars, Kenny, the consummate professional, really appreciate that. But the Belimo Energy Valve, check that out. That is just so worth doing, Kenny.
Right, and just to go over the technical documentations one more time, because I don't think, if you don't know about it yet, you've really got to take a look at it. I mean, we're talking about that the BACnet protocol is an inherent, it's embedded in the actuators, the data analysis tool. So it has a communication capability that's untouched. So the Belimo product is so well engineered that it's coming to us in layers. They're unfolding one layer after another of how much more detail and information and data you can get out of your system, because, like you said, that's where you're going to save all your money.
Well, Kenny, listen. Let's just take a big step back because it really didn't dawn on me until I sort of got to the very beginning. So let's just say you're a consulting engineer and you're doing a project, right? You got to size a chiller, all right? So, and I might be oversimplifying, so for our consulting engineers out there, I apologize, but we've got this right. So basically what you have to do is you design it on design conditions, which basically means you're picking either the average days that the temperature is going to be or your worst case scenario, and you're sizing your equipment to handle that load, right? So now you got all these chill water, hot water coils going up in a building, and they're designed for a particular design day. So as soon as you're not at that design temperature, things get out of balance, okay? So basically, that's why you have balancing valves. So the balancing people come in, and they try to balance the system out. But, Kenny, it's only accurate at one, you know, at a particular zone, it's accurate. So what happens is the temperatures fluctuate and change. Your coils either get flooded or get starved, okay? Or you got to hire, in essence, you'd have to have the balancing guy come in virtually every time the weather changed to have it be ideal, okay? So what that basically means is the engineers have to size equipment for the worst case scenarios and the water flow. And then you're controlling off of pressure versus temperature. When you go to delta T on a new job, that would allow the engineer to downsize the equipment, okay, and the piping and everything else. Now, the way people get to, so it's huge savings just in that. And again, like I said, but even if you've got an existing system and you retrofit, it allows you to change, you know, to control off a delta T. So you're going to get huge savings here. But more importantly, Kenny, if you're a maintenance engineer, you're going to eliminate all those nuisance calls where people are calling up going, I'm too hot or I'm too cold because the coil's either flooded or starved. Everything gets balanced out. I want to say it's magic, but it's not. It's just brilliant engineering and brilliant manufacturing. Fair statement?
I agree. Again, our area is very slow to receive that because the initial cost is higher than the standard way, the sweet spot way. So it requires a sale. It requires a made market. Make market. You have to really truly earn your stripes. But when you do it, you got a satisfied customer. You've got results immediately coming back to ensure and reassure everybody this was the way to go. And then you have one or two good projects in your area, and it kind of grows. In all fairness to some of the other manufacturers, they're coming in with their different versions of the similar valve, but they don't have the parts and components that Belimo does that really and truly differentiates this product from the other products, because it has intelligence in it. It has amazing intelligence in it, and that's where where you can start to really do the strategy. In the MIT, the case studies, there's about six of them in the white papers. They really do a great job. So if you can get somebody's attention, get them into the mentality where they want to see what's available and the reasoning behind making a higher cost up front cost, but you get it handsome dividends in the back. So very well designed, very well engineered, and very well marketed. So well done, Belimo.
True story. All right, Kenny, let's take it to the next post, big dog.
Oh, surprise. It's a Johnson Controls Business Conference post.
No way.
Well, you know what? This is the summary post. I really like the way you did this because you say, in honor of Johnson Controls Business Conference earlier this week in Orlando, Control Trends put together a highlight reel of a few Johnson Controls accomplishments in the recent past. And it goes back to the ABCS conference last year. It goes back to the 2013 Control Trends Awards where Chris Steichman wins Executive of the Year. Johnson Controls wins Control Vendor of the Year. And then this year's 2014 winners, we have Chris Lane up there twice. Greg Wilmer couldn't make it, but he won the Technical Support Person of the Year. So it's a great fluid capture of some of the highlights of Johnson Controls as seen through the lens of Control Trends.
Well, yeah, absolutely. And I got news for you. Rob Allen still has four other videos from that conference, which will be posted next week. And, you know, bottom line, Kenny, we're getting invited more and more to cover more conferences. And if we do this, these are the type of things we'll do for you. We'll make sure that the community gets to benefit if they're not able to go there, sort of see what you guys are all about. So Kenny and I are going to do as many of those conferences as we can. And if we can't make it, we got a really good substitute in our friend Rob Allen, who did a great job, I think.
We sure do. All right, Eric, the last post is how to navigate change in the building automation controls industry. This is a great kudos to Ken St. Clair for putting together this collaboration, this collaboratory. And we know that the collaboratories come from a concept where you have collaboration in a laboratory, a classroom without walls, just a fabulous theme that Ken keeps elaborating. This was the seventh one, but this was your, you made this concise video to answer a specific question where we had, you know, a young engineer in the crowd ask Mr. McMillan, Andy McMillan, how can you possibly poise yourself to stay, you know, mentally ready for so many challenges? If there's so many changes in our industry, and it's just relentless. And he answers with some.
Well, hang on a second, Kenny. We're going to do something here. His answer is so profound, Kenny. Let's not tell him what he said. Watch that video. It is probably one of the most inspiring minute and a half you'll spend from one of our experts, Andy McMillan, who's the president of BACnet International. It's brilliant. And to your point, this was an excerpt from Ken Sinclair's Collective Community Collaboratory that was held in AHR. So I think it's the second or third one Ken's done. He does it every year in conjunction with AHR. So I will say this, if you're at AHR next year, there are two things you got to do. One is go to the Control Trends Awards, and two is go to Ken Sinclair's Collaboratory, as well as see the spectacular show that is AHR. But yeah, I don't want to give anything away on that, Kenny, because the quotes, Andy, is one of the most succinct, inspiring answers I think I've ever seen. So rather than us give it away, just check that out and send that video, send a link to that video to any of your young guns, anybody in your industry that maybe is feeling a little uninspired. But I think the gist of it, Kenny, like you said, we're facing so many changes, so many challenges right now, and it was a great question and a great answer.
Also, just to summarize, Andy McMillan is president of BACnet International, and he's on a board with a bunch of really smart guys. They really, truly, I would recommend everybody watch all of those videos because it's a learning process. I mean, you talk about quick ways to learn and assimilate new information and stay smart and current. These videos that we've produced are going to be, you know, a great way to do that. But you also get to see Tree Sullivan from buildingcontext.me. If you don't know who Tree Sullivan is, she's also captured in that video clip.
No, absolutely, for sure, Kenny. And so, speaking of Ken Sinclair, I guess his latest episode of automatedbuildings.com will be hitting the street here in April, so I encourage you to check that. We'll probably be reporting on that next week. Maybe we can even get Ken to come onto the show and talk a little bit about next week's episode. Big surprises. But with that, Kenny, I tell you what, I hear the boom, 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 boom. And that's not just a Motown song. I think my wife, hopefully, is getting ready to go in labor. And
so exciting, Eric. I'm so happy for you, man.
I appreciate it, Kenny Smyers. Appreciate it.
Oh, can we talk about, do you guys come up with a name or anything?
Yeah, it's going to be a little boy, according to the DNA. And he's going to be named Axel Bengt, after my dad, who founded Stromquist & Company. So I tell you what, in honor of him, his birthday was the 18th. He passed away a couple years ago, but I'll tell a quick story on him if you're interested. So he was quite a character. So he grew up in Sweden for a while. His pop passed away when he was very young, and they had a bunch of brothers and sisters. So he was the youngest. He got to stay with the mom, but everybody else went. They went from being fairly affluent to having nothing. But he got to stay with his mom, but he loved the sea. And so at 15, he was a pretty big kid. He went off and joined the Swedish Merchant Marines. Okay. And so he contracted yellow fever when, I guess he was in his early 20s, down in South America. They were doing something and they left him down there to die. The captain of the ship said, make him comfortable. He's not going to make it. We got to go. And my dad recovered. And when he did, the only ship that was sailing out was a convoy ship. Is when we were doing the convoys right before World War II. So he signed on with the U.S. convoy ship with the Merchant Marines and spent all of World War II in, you know, doing stuff with the U.S. Navy. And he was on leave, Kenny, in the middle of the war, and they were in some bar someplace, and a bunch of them got drunk, and there was an executive from Westinghouse, and he basically passed out business cards. After the war, if any of you guys want a job, give me a call, right? So my dad kept the call card, and a couple years later, this guy gets a call. We met in the bar. I've come for the job. And so this guy put my dad on. He started with Westinghouse and, you know, was doing really good. He got transferred to Atlanta. And my dad was a pretty observant guy, so he knew, Kenny, that if you got your next step up, if you got transferred back to Boston or, and I might have the cities wrong, Chicago, you were going places. If they gave you Milwaukee or Kansas City, it was basically a dead-end street. So he gets a call one day, his boss brings him in and says, hey, great news. You get to go, you're getting promoted. You get to go to either Kansas City or Milwaukee. So my dad knows this is not good news. So anyway, his boss says, think about it over lunch, let me know. So my dad is riding in an elevator, and as fate would have it, two people in front of him are talking. And I want to say it was Sterling Radiator, but I probably had that company wrong. But they're riding down the elevator, and as fate would have it, two people are talking, and there's a guy from, we'll call it Sterling Radiator, trying to convince this other guy to be his rep. And my dad's listening to this conversation to get to the bottom floor, and the guy's going, like I told you before, I appreciate it, but I'm not really interested. I handle another line. To that, my dad taps the guy on the shoulder. He goes, my name is Bink Stromquist. I couldn't help overhearing. Sterling Radiator is a great product line. I'm the guy you need to be talking to. Could I buy you a cup of coffee? Let's have lunch and let's talk about it. So my dad signs an agreement with this guy to start his own company and be his rep over lunch. But he has a big challenge. He has no money at all, $0, right? So he's listening to the radio, because this is back in the 50s, early 50s, and there was a famous banker in Atlanta. It was either Bennett Brown or Mills Lane. It was one of these guys. But it would be the equivalent, like, from Ted Turner from CNN. But this guy's on the radio, and he goes, this is, we'll call him Bennett Brown. This is Bennett Brown from CNS Banks. Let the folks at CNS make your dreams come true. So my dad decides that this is the guy. So he calls his boss, tells him he's got an appointment he's got to go on. He heads down. He finds CNS Bank headquarters, goes to whatever the penthouse was, because Bennett Brown didn't mean to come see him, but my dad decided he would interpret it that way. He parks himself outside this guy's office until he's willing to come out and see him, which was a couple hours later. And my dad stands up. He introduces himself. My name is Bink Stromquist. I'm an immigrant from Sweden. I'm an American citizen now. I fought all of World War II for this great country. I'm a hard worker. I have the American dream. And you, Mr. Bennett Brown, are the only one that can help make my dream come true. And this is a different time and a different era. He shook my dad's hand. He sent him down to this particular branch. They loaned him, I think, a couple thousand dollars to start his business. And that's how he started his business. And that's how Stromquist started. So,
Great story.
Remind me next week, and I'll tell you what he did when he met my mom for the first time. And we'll continue with that. But with that, Kenny Smyers, I mean, we're getting a little nostalgic here because his namesake is getting ready to come into the world. Little Axel Bink Stromquist will hopefully be with us soon. But to all our listeners out there, thank you so much for your well wishes. We will keep you posted. Kenny Smyers, another great week at Control Talk. Thanks, as always, for the great work that you do. And with that, we'll just say, have a great week and stay in control.
Indeed, Eric.
Indeed, Kenny Smyers.